Ian, Jeremiah wants to know, what food item would you fill the Stanley Cup with?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I need to think about it.
Well, okay. It's got to be a food item that, like, you can't, like, put, like, a steak or, like, I guess you could do, like, a turkey or something. But, like, it's got to be something that, like, fits in the bowl.
My first answer would be, like, an ice cream sundae. But then I'm lactose intolerant. So, like, that
you can do. There's vegan. There's options for that.
So I don't know if it would be ice cream. Man, that would be so cool. You know what? No, I'm not putting food in the Stanley Cup. I just want Ethan in the Stanley Cup.
See that? Yeah. Now I'm thinking that, like, it's gross to have a baby and food. Like, I know they clean it, and I don't know what the, you know, procedure is, but as long as I get to do it before you, I would like a nice like pesto based pasta salad. That'd be nice in there, or maybe some mac and cheese, some kind of like my barbecue side dishes. That'd be what I'd want.
Oh, that sounds good. Maybe Lucky Charms for me, but then we're going there to milk again.
Again, there's lactose free milk. I've discovered that. So we're doing a Q&A podcast. That's the first one. I know you haven't seen these, but I've got a load of these from Patreon, Facebook, and Twitter, and I'll tell you, one of those groups did way worse than the other two. Let's dig into it, shall we?
And now it's time for the RMNB podcast.
Again, and in your defense, you have not seen these questions. I have.
Nope.
I haven't actually done any preparation. Here's one that actually digs into this question comes from Evan via Patreon, and it actually uses our thinking brains. What's it going to take for Cousy to get better at face-offs?
Well, he was learning from Jay Beagle, and he actually got pretty good. What did he finish last year? Like, I know he's like just
44.
Short of 50. Oh,
no,
really?
No, he's way south of 50. Yeah, he's bad.
Yeah, so the thing with Cousy was,
like, David's bad too.
When Cousy was in the KHL, and I actually wrote about this before he played a single game in Washington, was he played wing in the KHL because he couldn't win any faceoffs. Like he's a great centerman. He's a great passer. Obviously, he thinks fast, pass first a lot of times, but he always struggled in the dot. So they just hit him by putting him on the wing. So I was really surprised when Adam Moats was like, this guy's a center. I was like, oh, no. But it's worked out really well. It's like his one foil, like Shaq and free throws.
He won 45, under 45% during the regular season during 5-on-5. In the playoffs, he was 37% faceoffs. You won 100 of 272 faceoffs, so bad. There's like something to be said about the faceoffs. That it's like a team stat that you count as an individual thing. But I think that Kuznetsov's just sort of bad at it, and we just sort of have to live with it. I don't know,
And I'm okay with that. You know, playing hockey, it's really something where you just build things up over time. Where a lot of times it's not necessarily your skill or acumen at faceoffs. It's just having experience and knowing what that guy's going to do, or countering him, or just making a move yourself. A lot of times it's kind of like playing chess, more so than actually like having brute strength. You know what I mean?
You know better than me. I trust you on that. I don't know anything about face-offs of any kind. The only sport I really played was swimming, and there's just very little game theory involved there. I will say that Kuznetsov is really good at the stuff that happens after the face-off, and that matters quite a bit.
You know, I this is completely unrelated, but when I watch Baby Channel with Ethan, there's always a Michael Phelps therapy commercial. And
all right, let's if you got your Russian Machine podcast bingo card at home, y'all, we just ticked off the Michael Phelps box.
No, but since you were boys in the back of the day, he's always like, I'm Michael Phelps, and I didn't have any friends growing up. The only friend I had was the line under the pool. Like, I would stare at that and it wouldn't talk back. And I just hear it 17 times a day.
So I can confirm that is true. Next question from Ben, our friend Ben. From a roster standpoint only, if the Caps were to win another Stanley Cup, spit twice, throw a soul over your shoulder, would it be done the exact same way as last year, or do you think someone else will have to come and play a bigger role? So I guess the way it was done last year, I would say it was just gigantic effort, especially from Orlov Niskanen as a pairing, and Ovechkin Kuznetsov during even strength, and then adding in Backstrom and Oshie with some extra, you know, those huge goals from like Eller and stuff. But like it was mostly like a top down, you know, leaders carrying the team victory. I think if a team wins a championship, there's 100 different ways to do it. I don't think it would have to be the same way. But if they were to win another cup, I would say it'd be probably different. That said, never bet against Ovi and Kuznetsov. I mean, they were so magnificent in this playoffs. I don't know. I have a totally not committal answer there.
I think it would be different just because the way they did it last year was so, you know, last year it seems like they switched to a 1-3-1 in the Columbus series, and that really took them to the next level. A lot of guys that were really good in the series played more of a supporting role that will probably have a much bigger role this year, especially with Riordan. Guys like Varana, I think Burakovsky was pretty terrible all last year because of his injuries, and I think, you know, that guy looks like a meathead now over in Sweden. So I think he's going to have a breakout year this year. It just, I know that seems simple. Like, he looks like a meathead, best shape of his life. He's going to have a breakout year. But a lot of guys in contract years, cough, cough, John Carlson, you know, they come out of nowhere.
Please don't say best shape of my life. That brings back some from Brooks-like memories there. Yeah, yeah, I totally agree with you that like last season the way they did it is very unlikely, or is a very uncommon way. But I suppose that if you look at any like championship team, you'll say that it was at the very least peculiar. And I don't mean to say that like the team didn't deserve it or anything like that. I just meant that like you had circumstances where like Kuznetsov was hurt and you know, Backstrom missed time, and you know, Burakovsky had supposedly, you know, season-ending surgery, and then came back 3 games later, and you know, Wilson was suspended for it. Just so many weird things happened in the lineup, and the only thing that you really could rely on the whole playoffs was Alex Ovechkin going popping off.
You know, one interesting thing too is like how the Penguins won their back-to-back championships, because that first year I feel like it was luck mixed with scoring on high danger shots mixed with kind of bending and not breaking defense, because they were missing so many guys. They, you know, they were getting outshot, they were getting outchanced, but they just scored on all their high danger shots, and they had good goaltending, and they won that first year. And then the second year, they did it a completely different way.
That's so true. Yeah. Yeah. And like when LA won, they just were miserable to play against. And when Boston won, they didn't allow any goals against. Like there's a million different ways to the championship. The worst thing I think a team could do is try and imitate another team's path to victory, because it's not reliable. It's not repeatable.
And you know what? I think that'll be one of the most interesting storylines this year, is that the Capitals technically are doing that with their roster being almost exactly the same. But I think this team will have a much different personality than last year's. And I think they'll probably build off a lot of what they did in the playoffs and successfully, because I think Riordan had a lot of sway in some of those decisions that they made towards the end of the year and in the playoffs.
That's a very politic way of you saying that. I totally agree. There's some more questions that I don't want to like cannibalize, but that was a great one from Ben there. Hina here says, this is again from Patreon. This whole group Patreon got first dibs here. So, any thoughts on pricing trends for seats, especially given the general uproar about the price of opening night tickets? I know you blogged about this, but is this the going rate for other teams? So the consequence of the Caps winning a championship and reinvestment into what is now called Capital One Center is that ticket prices are going up. I don't know what to say about that. What do you think?
I think, you know, I've actually had some conversations with some people outside the organization about this, and some people that work with athletes and things like that. And they were actually pretty happy about the fact that just Leonsis is actually charging what some of these things are worth. For instance, like that championship raising ceremony, like, regardless of what happens, they're going to sell that game out. And a lot of times StubHub makes that profit off of the Capitals. So I think, to be honest, like I kind of sway towards the businessman here a little bit, because I know, you know, I know Ted's making money, but I also know that, you know, it's definitely his right to make money off this, and you know, other third party outlets, you know, should they be making that money that he should be making? So I in general, I like the aggressiveness. I know that's not necessarily the question, but I think that's really, I think it was really interesting, at least for the banner raising night. I haven't looked at many of the other nights where they're trying to do it. I think it's maybe a little too aggressive, but that's how it is with StubHub too, you know.
The next question is from Steven, and it's related. Steven says, what are the chances Capital One Center will have to perform some maintenance on the Stanley Cup banner the week before the Penguins' first home game, causing them to coincidentally have to raise it before that game? So it's a little bit of a phrasing joke there, but what Steven's saying is, oh, whoops, we goofed up, and now we're going to raise the banner against the Penguins instead of, what is it, Ottawa or whoever is the first game against?
Boston.
I can't remember. Yeah. Boston. I think it was a cute joke. So yeah, I think it kind of sucks. What Steven's getting at is, it kind of sucks that we're not raising the cup. Who cares? The cup's not being raised in the game against the Penguins, but instead Boston. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, they should really troll like that, because how many times are we going to win a cup? And last year it happened, so why not do it to the Pens this year?
Do you remember like when the Caps beat the Penguins, and like people on like Twitter were doing photoshops of like, you know, Caps beat the Penguins 2018, like that was the thing they would raise at the top. I was like, I don't know, man, I just saw two series of the Capitals kind of whip ass. Like I think there might be another banner to raise here. Like after that series, like everything felt different. This is the one that I think we're just gonna totally be terrible at. Jeremiah asks, and by the way, these are not going to be all on topic. What is the best sitcom on TV right now? And what is the best sitcom on TV right now?
Oh God, because I can only name like a handful, because I literally guys, all I do for you is blog, watch my baby, and play hockey, and that's all I do. I watch all the NBC. I watch all the Dick Wolf shows. And I just want to be honest, they're not all great. They're not. But it's just what I do. I'm going to go with the best sitcom being Hardball.
Okay, so sitcom means situation comedy.
I know.
And what Hardball actually is.
It kind of is.
It's a horror show. It is a Clive Barker, Stephen King, depressing ass. The correct answer is The Good Place. With Kristen Bell. I don't watch a lot of sitcoms. I watch that one. Eileen and I beyond love it. It is a great TV show.
Oh, I thought of one. What is it? It's Right Off the Boat. Off the Boat.
Fresh Off the
Fresh
Boat.
Fresh Off the Boat. Yeah.
It's like an Asian family in America.
Yeah, I really like that one. I've watched that one off and on before, and whenever it's on, I think it's really smart. And I love how that kid in the very beginning of that series would always wear a Shaq jersey. Like the old Shaq Orlando Magic.
Oh, the Magic,
jersey.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
I got a threesome of questions from Amy to wrap up the Patreons. The first one's on topic. Who plays more games this season? Nathan Wolka or Brooks Orpik? What a question, by the way.
Oh, man.
I think it's a layup, actually.
I think it's Walker, but...
No, it's Brooks Orpik. we disagree. That's interesting. Dude, Brooks Orpik's going to play 55, 60 games.
No, Brooks Orpik's either going to play 82 or like
right,
10.
20. There's no in between, right? Like,
there's no in between. Like Reardon is like, you know, he's a great player. I love the grit, the gritty grittiness and intangibles. Or like when they re-signed him, there was an agreement that, you know, you're probably not going to play much.
Yeah.
But that $1.5 million kind of suggests he's going to play at least what, like 30, 40?
Yeah.
Like the signing bonus?
Yeah. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it's what, $1 million flat, and then, or is it, yeah, it's $1 million flat, and then he can get an extra, what, like $250,000 if he plays what, 20 games, another 250,000 if he plays 40, is that right?
Yeah, something like that. It's maybe really close to that, yeah.
Yeah. What about Nathan Walker? I mean, I think we'll have stuff come about this before too long, but that fourth line is going to have a lot of competition.
I don't know. I just see him as a good player, and I think he should play all 82. I like, he's a tough guy. He is for a little tiny Australian that fits in your pocket, he will fight anyone, even a 7 foot guy. I don't know, you know, his problem is, like, you know, this is one of those few things where I agreed with Barry Trotz. Like, he kind of struggles with board battles and winning individual battles because he's so tiny, and he just gets out muscled sometimes. But, you know, I just think he's a good player. I just can't imagine them not playing him. Like,
I totally agree. Especially in a fourth line role, and man, how good did he look in his one playoff game?
I didn't understand. He looked like one of the best players on the team that night.
I think maybe it was just by comparison with the dudes he was on a line with at the time.
Maybe. I know, he was like zooming out there like he was on. It's like you're playing like he's on fire on NBA Jam, and he's just like, you know.
Yeah, he was in a gear that everyone else wasn't in. Question two from Amy, still on topic. Is anything really going to change with Todd Reirden in as home coach, as head coach? The system, development of young players, what does he bring to the table that's new? My position on this is that coaching, we get sort of like hints and innuendo about stuff that happened, but coaching is ultimately like a black box. Like, we don't see the process. We just see the output. And we don't know... We don't know with any authority or with any sort of like absolute confidence what Trotz thought about somebody that, you know, Reirden disagreed with. We don't know which players they liked differently. We know they didn't agree about things. Tom Galluti of NHL.com said that Trotz had a tendency to delegate a lot last year. Reirden also seemed intimate that he was interested in making some changes in the locker room. I have no idea what that means. But I don't know. Ian, what do you think changes?
Well, from what I've already seen, he's going to bring some bigger words, some more corny language.
More neck length.
Yeah, more neck length. I think he kind of seems like the internet version of Barry Trotz. And what I mean by that is it's like what the internet thinks he should do. I think he's going to do more things like that in terms of like roster decisions, I think. I mean, we don't know yet, so don't hold me to this, but I just have an inkling that, you know, like, I think Orlov and Niskanen, a lot of the D pairs minus, you know, I think a lot of that was him. And I just think that he's going to be a little bit more aggressive in playing young players and things like that, and playing systems that the team really works well in. I think, you know, last year, again, in the playoffs, I think he had a major role in kind of focusing the team on how they're going to play. And when they made that change, I think they turned into a championship team. And so it's going to be interesting what they do at the beginning of the year here with him here a full season. I think one thing that's probably going to change for the worse, I really do think this, is I think the power play is going to start tailing off at some point. And maybe it's this year. I know that Dower Blaine is still in the house, but I'm going to be really interested to see if the power play can still keep its clip up.
That's a good point. And there's a lot to be said about like the quality of the offense that the team's been generating over the last year, and whether they deserve the actual goals that have come off of them. And I think it's an open question. I have to say, defer, and I'm not sure. I feel like we'll see different favorites perhaps, you know, emerging. Yeah, but
that's
but
a good point.
I don't know. I think we're gonna see a lot of things stay the same, especially like Ovi Kuznetsov as a pair, I think is pretty likely to last, especially if Nick Backstrom has good wingers. I think that Reardon's a big fan of Tom Wilson. I think you'll see very little change in how Orlov Niskanen's deployed. But, you know, we'll see. I'm copping out on that one. Last question from Amy, and this one's off topic, and this is the last of our Patreon questions. Does Ian even remotely understand any of Peter's not up for debate columns?
I definitely understood the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle ones, but that was because
there's only four of them and we grew up with it.
Yeah, exactly. The rest of them, a lot of them I was kind of confused about.
Harry Potter?
I mean, I've watched all the Harry Potter movies, but it's kind of like, you know, like a colander where, you know, you put spaghetti in and then, you know, all the water comes out. Imagine that's like knowledge sinking into your brain. Like, Harry Potter was the spaghetti for me.
I got your metaphor. That's great. Did you watch the TV sitcom Friends in the 1990s?
Yeah, I did. Actually, I watched a ton of that. But like now I look at Friends as a horrible show.
It's because it is. Do you think that most goalies are Ross? Like most like goalkeepers in the NHL, do you think they're Rosses?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I think they're more like Joey in some ways, because Joey was very confident about who he was, yeah, but very aloof.
Yeah, like your Sergei Bobrovskys and your Henrik Lundqvists, those are Joeys.
Yeah.
But like your Cam Talbots, your Johnny Quicks, your Devin Dubniks, your Pekka Rinnes, your Jake Allens, your Halaks, your Holtby's, yeah, Holtby's a Ross. Carey Price is a Joey. Semyon Varlamov, I don't care. Marc-Andre Fleury is, he might be a Joey. Yeah, Marc-Andre Fleury is a Joey. Scott Darling is a Gunther.
I know Gunther. I remember him.
All right, let's move out of the nice people that we enjoy everything we have to do with them on Patreon and go to the relative putrid cesspool that is Twitter. And Eddie asked us, Eddie's got a three-parter here. How are you? How was your summer? Hey, Ian, how are you? How was your summer?
My summer was good. I've started to wean my blog time away into being a dad, and I actually do not want to blog anymore. So just spend all my time with Ethan. So I'm trying to find that balance a little bit. But I've had a really great summer. It felt really short because of the Capitals Stanley Cup win.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, it just feels like it's blazed by, and I missed the World Championship coverage.
I didn't miss the World Championship coverage at all. I hate the World Championship. I'm so glad we didn't care about it.
So the last part of the summer, we've been interviewing a bunch of new people. We've hired a few of them. They've been really awesome. So you'll be seeing more and more of them. But I've just been getting kind of ready for next year. I've been spending a lot of time with Ethan. He's been playing hockey with me, which has been really cute. But like, I've just been wildly busy. I've for whatever reason, I'm more busy now than I'm usual. My day job company got acquired, so I'm kind of training for a new company. So it's just been really, 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 really busy.
Same. Just the busiest. I'm getting my health back on track. That's an ongoing project. But yeah. Question two. This is a good one. What was your favorite band you started listening to before they got big?
Oh no.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough one for you. You can say my band. That was it. Basically, anytime you listen to my band is before my band got big.
Wait, who is yours
though? The band I had 15 years ago.
No, come on. Oh, what, like your actual band?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
That's fair. Yeah, yeah. Like me as a musical performer from the 90s and 2000s.
I'll give you two answers. One you'll probably projectile vomit at me for, and the second one you'll still shake your head. But
if it's Good Charlotte, I'm down with it, man. That's my answer.
Yeah, you're on that bandwagon really early. No, my first one was, oh God, I don't want to admit it. I went to, God, it turned into a mess. I went to see Puddle of Mud, a $5 MTV show at 9:30 Club. And that was like when no one knew who they were. And I was like, man, and this was like 16-year-old Ian. And he was really down with that angst. And now the lead singer is just he's just an alcoholic.
Yeah, he's having some bad times.
Yeah. The other band was OK Go. I actually saw them when they were like doing boy band dances, like that ended their show with boy band dances to make fun of like Backstreet Boys. And then they got gigantic like 3 years later on the MTV Music Awards with the Treadmills when they did that Treadmill song, Here We Go Again. And so that would probably be my band. Like they actually, when I was a really, really quick story, I actually met them at my 21st birthday party. They played at the Black Cat. And afterwards, they hung out with me and they signed a CD and put all their favorite beers there. And then I tried each one of them. And they were just so great. And the lead singer is actually from DC. So Damian Kulesh. So.
Oh, very cool. Good Charlotte on my side. What's that band? J. Roddy Walston. I used to like be pals with their guitar player back in the day, so I've been following them before they got big. Art Brute I saw in England in like 2004 or five, before they got, well, oh, they're not really awesome. Huge, but they were awesome. I don't know. All right. Last question.
One more. And we know Young Rising Suns before they get
played. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Can you come to the concert in October?
If I don't have to do any casino night stuff.
There's, yeah. Oh, is it the same night as Sunday? It's a Sunday, though.
They're having casino night that night, of course.
I did not know that. Damn it. Okay. Between the lot of you. Is Eddie English? Between the lot of you, how many times have you watched the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
So this is a funny story, is I actually took a high school date to the Rocky Horror Picture Show at the Weinberg Center, and Peter was there.
Was it the one I was hosting?
Yeah.
I used to like host, I mean, I only did like a couple times, but at the Weinberg Center, I dressed up as like a normie, as a virgin, and we like host. Yeah, those are fun times. I probably have only seen it like 6 or 7 times, which is a lot, but
that is the only time I've seen it, by the way.
Oh, so let's say 7 or 8 times total, although I do love it. Brendan wants to know, where do babies come from? Hashtag help. We could skip that one, Ian, if you want.
Why don't we just say the stork?
The stork. Dom says, how many times have you watched the championship DVD and do you still cry? Ian, I have to make a confession. I have not seen the championship DVD. I hate the idea of buying a DVD. I don't know.
Elaborate. Go into that.
I don't know. So behind me, like in this office, I've got like, Eileen's got like an absurd collection of DVDs. Like she's like a 2003 dorm room. Like just like a entire wall filled with DVDs, and I just don't have any. And I'm like, everything I get, I like rent on like Amazon, like digital now, and I just feel like it's old school. It's like getting a cassette single. It's like I don't need the physical artifact for it. So I've been trying to find like a direct download for the DVD, and I'll just buy it.
You don't need to buy it because I have 5 of the Blu-rays that the company sent to me, and I haven't watched it once yet.
Oh really?
Yeah, so
we should do like a commentary track for it. Like, oh, you and me watch cool. it together, and we'll record us talking and crying over it.
I would love that. So for me, it's a little bit different. Is that emotionally, I don't want to watch it right now. Like, I want to watch it with more perspective because, like, I feel like with the sight, I get so like zoomed in to things that like it's very I know everything that happened, so like I want to forget about a lot of stuff that happened before I take it in and breathe it in. But a commentary track would be a great reason to watch it for the first time. But yeah, I'm weird like that. It's just like I get, you know, like obviously I spent a ton of time on the site, so like, you know, like for instance when they released like the trailer and like they released a never before seen through us, I had seen most of all of that stuff, so I was just like, yeah, I should just kind of give it some time before I totally can really bring it in.
It feels like I'm not ready to relive it because it feels like I'm living it still, like I'm not done living it yet.
Yeah, and so like I actually don't understand people who are watching it and crying about it, but I really love that they say that and are doing it. It's so cool to me, but I'm just not there yet.
Yeah, when I do watch it, when I will watch it, I will cry for damn sure. But I'm probably not ready for it yet. But when we do watch it, we'll make a commentary track and put it up on the podcast.
Okay, I'm 100% in.
Alrighty. Michael asks, what school in the DMV do you think will be the first to make the jump into D1 NCAA? I think the answer is James Madison University of Harrisonburg, Virginia. I think they're not ready to admit it, but I think it's been in their plan for like 15 years now.
But isn't UMBC already in D1?
I don't know. I have to admit, I know nothing about college sports.
Well, like, I guess, does UMBC qualify as a DMV? Which maybe it doesn't.
Yeah, sure it does.
I mean, it kind of does. I mean, yeah.
Why wouldn't it?
Baltimore, now people in DC kind of
DMV.
It's like the Orioles Nationals argument. You know what I mean?
But the Orioles are definitely a DMV team. They're the M in the DMV.
Okay, so what's UMBC is definitely a D1 team, so they're already there.
I'm Googling this. I'm not sure that they are.
Yeah, they are. 100% sure.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
I went there. they don't have a football team. That's how.
Oh, yeah. The UMBC Retrievers represent the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and NCAA Division I athletics.
America East, baby.
America East. Okay.
It's now like the nerdy, weird schools of the East Coast.
JMU D1 Sports is JMU a Division I school? I guess they're Division I AA. But when people say they mean like top tier, and the JMU's not one yet. But I think they're definitely trying to do it, and they've been, you know, they've won like three championships in the last like X number of years.
I think that's actually the right answer. And that school's growing, and you know, no offense, Peter. You know, I know you went to JMU, and I always thought of it as a party school.
Mouth.
I always thought of it as a party school. But God, seeing you go there opened my eyes to the fact that it was more than that.
I partied. I also read poetry, but I partied. Andrew asks, what is the one piece you could foresee the team picking up mid-season to ensure that the back-to-back becomes a reality? Hashtag no more jinx. I think there's a really easy answer here. The one piece the team could pick up mid-season.
Does it rhyme with Borpik?
No, pick up. It's Erik Karlsson.
Oh.
If you put Erik Karlsson, first of all, Karlsson.
Yeah, you got to do it just for making Joe B's head explode every night.
Hell yeah. I think that's absolutely
no relation.
I won't get into it, but like I've got these like fantasies about like who the team would have to deal to like get Karlsson to like, and like imagine like it's like a sign and trade for Ottawa, so they've got Karlsson plus X number of years or something like that, because that's the only way they would, you know, get negotiating leverage or something. Whatever. I would love Karlsson to come to town. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to make it into the season. I think there might be fist fights if he has to report in Ottawa. not saying he's not professional, but just that situation. You know, I love that article that Kara did on Friday. Even though a few commenters were like, "Oh, RMB, you're just doing ad money. You're just trying to get ad money with these posts." And I made the comment, "You can have the 25 cents we maybe made through this." But even their social media guy is kind of a jerk. Like, he was like, it was a joke, obviously. And then he was like yelling at people on Twitter on his personal account. And I just didn't really understand that at all. It's like, if you were any kind of self-aware person, you would be like, why didn't this work? And not be emotional about it. Like, maybe be a little emotional because it's becoming a big deal and you feel pressure from people in the organization. But like, if you're going to do a Photoshop, you have to do it like Peter Hassett does, where you put like age 34, you draw all the people in like yellow and have them have weird faces and like have pizza floating in the air and making no sense. But like, anyways, that was random. But my point is that I just can't see him making it into the season. So I don't know. I have no idea who's going to be available, to be honest.
Yep. TBD. Andy asks, this one I'm going to lean on you because I don't know anything about this. Is Phoenix Copley ready? Do you guess that Samsonov will finish the season as number two? Who is our next solid deal? First one first. About the goalies. Yeah. Is Phoenix Copley ready?
Yeah, I think he definitely can be a good backup in the league. I don't know how great of a backup he'll be, but I don't necessarily think he could be a starter. But with goalies, they're, you know, it's hard to really tell with a goalie. Look at Oli Kolzik. He was a backup for like 6-7 years in the NHL before he became a full-time starter and took the job from Bill Ranford, a former guy who won the Conn Smythe. With Samsonov, I think he obviously has the higher ceiling by far. Yeah. And this is a really stupid way to look deeper into it. But today at the NHLPA Rookie Showcase, he debuted a new mask, and it was all Capitals related. Like, I didn't see anything, at least from what I saw, that had any Bears references on there. And so that kind of makes me scratch my head that maybe him starting in Washington is a possibility. So we'll see. But I think he'll definitely start with the Bears. And I think Copley is going to be one of those, you know, he's not going to set the world on fire. I think he's kind of like a Brent Johnson, if people can remember how it was when Oli and Brent Johnson would kind of go back and forth. It's like, you know, I think Copley could steal some games, you know, and things like that. But, you know, he's probably not, with Holpe playing so much, he's probably not going to set the world on fire with his numbers.
I'll say this. The organization obviously loves Copley because they've snagged him up, what, I guess, twice now?
Yeah,
three times if you count the initial time.
And any guy that's trained by Mitch Korn, you know, you have to just assume that they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I think we're going to see Samsonov up in Washington at some point. I don't know if he'll finish the season as number two, but it's going to be an interesting season, especially to see how like Holtby does bounce back. I'm very, very, very confident that he will.
And one other observation about him too is that Tarek said, and it was a great observation, he's just gigantic, and that, and beyond that, he's very athletic. He might have more, you know, possibilities and talent, like high end talent, than like a Braden Holtby is. Can he actually put it together and be consistent and not hurt himself like a Michael Neuvert? You know, so it's gonna be really interesting to see if he can kind of put it together at the NHL level. Because, you know, when I watched him at the World Junior Championship, sometimes he would just overstretch, you know, to try and make saves, and he'd hurt himself. So he's gonna be a really interesting story, but he could be really, 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 really good. Like, he has a ton of talent.
Yeah, there's a follow up question that's somewhat related. This one's from Daniel. This one says, should the Caps give Mason Lehtinen a look at backup role with a little over $1 million in cap space? I say no, yeah. Definitely not Carey Lehtinen. I don't see why that would make any sense. Steve Mason, Steve Mason's an average. He's a fine goalie. He doesn't love the world, but
it's time to give some of the young guys some chances. And you know, you have Holtby. Why would you need a veteran backup? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless you really need one, then you can do that at the trade deadline for something cheap, like a fourth or fifth round pick. But until it's an actual problem, I don't see why they would sign someone and kind of not give some of the younger guys some opportunities to see what they actually have this year.
Another question that's just strictly on topic from Thomas via Twitter. He says, given that we are machine experts, who would win in a fight between RoboCop and Inspector Gadget? I have to ask first, Ian, are you familiar with the concept of a RoboCop?
Yes, I've watched all those movies. That's one that...
Did you really?
Yeah.
Those are, well, like the first one is a Stone Cold classic.
Yeah.
A Verhoeven film that's just genius. And Inspector Gadget, you do know?
Yes. I watched that cartoon, and I also watched the movies, which were kind of horrible.
Did not see the movies. Those are the ones with Matthew Broderick.
Yeah. RoboCop gave me nightmares.
It should. It was a terrifying, deeply satirical movie.
He would just like run over people. He would throw people in acid. He would just shoot up 100 people.
Like there's like a guy mugging a woman, and he shoots him in the penis. It's
yep.
I have a ton of fondness for RoboCop. I think RoboCop was a 2600 AD property. I think. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Commenters, like, so it's like a Frank Miller maybe property, like a comic book thing from the earlier 80s, and then like Verhoeven just sort of saw the genius satire and it made just one of the most blistering anti-Reagan movies ever made. God, it was genius and dark. He will murder Inspector Gadget. He's got auto targeting. Yeah. Inspector Gadget is a Penny's the real threat. Penny's the one you have to watch out for. RoboCop versus Penny. I think you got a battle there.
I agree. Like RoboCop is like, I don't know. He's just so badass. I mean, I wouldn't want to ever mess with RoboCop.
So the voice of Penny in the cartoon was a lady named, I think it's Cree Summer. I think she was in on A Different World, and I had the biggest crush on her when I was a little kid. Cool story, Pete. Next one from this one's from Andy, but a different Andy from the Andrew who asked earlier. Do the Caps trade everything to draft Sergei Ovechkin first overall in 2036?
I'm a yes.
No. Because Sergei Ovechkin is going to play basketball. Like the next generation, Tatiana is going to call the shots, and those shots are going to be baskets.
You know who's going to draft? You know who's going to draft Sergei Ovechkin?
Yes,
Ethan Olin.
Okay, Domin, are you? What sports are you going to have Ethan play?
Okay, he's going to choose. He's going to. I actually think that he'll probably end up in basketball if. But he really loves hockey. I mean, I shared a story about how the other night we took him outside and he was running around holding two baby hockey sticks and he tripped and fell on his face. And he like his tooth went into his lip and he was crying, blood everywhere. We took him inside. We thought we were done. And as soon as we, got the bleeding to stop and we got him, we wiped his tears. He just ran right to the door, picked up the hockey stick and was like, and he was like pulling the handle. Like, I want to go back out there. And I was just so proud of him. He didn't miss a shift. Like, and that's, he just loves things. He doesn't care if he gets hurt. He just loves things. He's going to keep doing it. And so hockey might be a thing for him. He sees how important it is for me. So that might be something that's important for him because of that.
That's great. He's a special kid.
He really is.
Dominic asks, will Ovechkin break Gretzky's goal record? Also, is water wet? In this case, no, water is not wet because Ovechkin will not be able to break Crosby's...
Whoa there, Peter.
Listeners, I'd like to extend an apology. Gretzky, I don't remember the numbers are, but like Ovechkin would have to average something like 40 goals for the next, like, I don't know, 5-6 seasons. I don't know if we'll get 5 more 6 NHL seasons out of Ovechkin. We might. Only 3 of those are going to happen in Washington. I think it's probably like I would bet that Ovechkin's goal output of the next 3 seasons averages around 40. But that's me being a little bit optimistic. I think there's still an aging curve coming for Ovi, and the fact that he like flirted with 40, like 50 goals last season's pretty buck wild. But I don't think it's likely because I think that there's a reckoning coming where he's only going to hit like 30, 25 because he's going to be 35 years old, and that's okay. Also, I think that if Ovechkin wants to continue playing in this league after his contract's up here is an open question. I'm not saying I'm like pessimistic about it, but yeah, I don't know. It's a big ask.
I think obviously he would probably end his career in Russia playing for Dynamo. I think that just seems... what he would do, and we've seen enough Russian interviews where he kind of suggests it as how he'd end his career. I think Nicholas Backstrom said that he wanted to do that with Bjornis this year, in like when he retires too. So I think that's going to happen. I actually am way more open to the idea of him breaking it, but it would just take him wanting to do it and doing whatever
and
it takes to
like
break
41,
it.
You
yeah,
know?
He would have to play into his 40s. But if he played into his 40s, I actually think he could do it.
Especially if like the league like encourages scoring in any kind of way. Mm-hmm. And Ovechkin can have if he like he's in another team where like he's even more specialized for offensive deployments and he still gets power play time, like that slap shot is going to age great. Like that the Ovi spot is not going to get bad at any point. Like it'll continue being deadly forever unless teams shadow him, in which case the rest of the power play score. So I have a lot of faith in his ability to continue scoring. It's more so about how many seasons will he have here.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, we're jumping off of Twitter and we're going to my favorite place on the internet, the Rush Machine Facebook comments. These questions are actually kind of great. So the first one's from a guy named Peter who is not me. And this one has a one-word answer that I'll let you deliver. What are the chances we have enough cap space to re-sign both Burakovsky and Varana next summer?
No.
No. No is the correct answer there. Yeah, one of those two dudes is gone, and it will break your hearts. It just has to happen. Those are the deals that were signed this year. I think we're going to see great seasons out of both of them. And I'm not sure that both of them will be here at the end of the regular season.
They would probably have to make some aggressive moves, which might happen.
It could happen. Oh, yeah. Anything can happen. But I think on the current trajectory, it's unlikely.
It also, next summer, we're going to be looking back at this Tom Wilson contract, which, you know, he may score. Well, let's be super weird and super optimistic and say Wilson scores 25 goals next
year.
Oh,
my God.
Let's be super
I was
crazy.
Going to flip out if you said 20. There's no
okay,
way.
20. Let's say 20, which feels far-fetched. But let's say he scores 20. Okay, we're still going to be looking at his deal last year and be like, they probably could have gotten away with like 4, you know. Like the 5 million number might hurt them, and that might force them to have to make some aggressive moves. But they have a lot of money tied up with certain guys, so that might be easier said than done. You know what I mean? What happens if Samsonov, let's say that Holtby gets hurt and Samsonov looks great? Holtby will look mighty fine to move because he's starting to get up there in age, and then you can re-sign one of your young guys long term. I mean, so there could be a lot that shakes out this year where both of them could stay, but they probably will have to move. You know, they'll have to do some moving to get both of those guys under the cap, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let me just double check one thing. Burakovsky, Varana.
How much cap space do they have now?
I think they just have just over a million.
Oh my gosh.
I think
and
a lot.
They got rid of Orpik. Think about that. They got rid of his big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you saying Arid. They got Arid. Are you still doing that?
Yeah. That's my Frederick accent.
All right. I think the biggest problem is that they're both like left wingers, and they're both evidently top sixers, and none of them are going to displace Ovi. So like we kind of like a blockade issue. So like which one of them is better at playing on the off wing is like anyway.
So what you're saying is they're going to trade Ovechkin.
Jack Barry wants us to give our 2019 playoff predictions, i.e. who will the Caps beat en route to # bat to back. Jack, I can't even get on your level right now. I will say that I don't think the Golden Knights will make the playoffs. I do not know if the Oilers will make the playoffs. I think the Islanders are going to be tragically bad. I think the Rangers are going to have a lot of struggle too. Maybe they'll get Panarin though. That's an interesting buzz I heard. I think Florida might have a comeback. I think Carolina will make the playoffs, but I've been saying that for 3 years. I've been wrong. I imagine that the Capitals are going to have a 100-point season, which is, you know, that's good news. So they'll be, you know, near the top of the division. And I don't know. When do you get the playoffs? Anything can happen. What happened in the playoffs was so bananas. I can't make a prediction right now. I can ask Keith the Coin, though. I actually have him right here. Let's get some good ASMR. All right. If it's heads, the Caps will play the Penguins in the first two rounds. It's tails. So the Penguins are going to miss the playoffs or get eliminated by the Blue Jackets. if it's heads in this next one, the Caps will play the Tampa Bay Lightning at some point. Oh, it's spinning. It's heads. All right. So Caps versus Tampa. Tampa, they're world beaters. They're the best team in the league, we're supposed to think. Let's do one more flip and see if the Caps will beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. Heads, yes. Heads is yes. So good news. The Caps are going to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, according to Keith Acoin, who was wrong about every pick after the first round last season. All right.
Wait, isn't that Keith Acoin 2 or whatever?
It's Keith Acoin the second, who we've been calling Keith Acoin because I lost the first one. Doesn't matter.
Rest in peace.
Did you say rust in peace?
No. No, I said rest, but that would have been clever.
Cool pun. Simon. Oh, yeah. Oh, this is a good one. This is a great question. Simon says, the Athletic rated the Caps farm system as worst in the league. This is Corey Pronman. Do you think that is accurate? When will it become a problem? I won't pretend to know nearly as much about farms and prospects as Corey does. I do know that by Corey's own admission, he weights the quality of a team. He weights like high end, like blue chip, like likely to become like a top line player or number one pairing defense or an excellent goalie. Those blue chips, he rates those like the top end talent much higher. Like he weights those because, you know, having a great first round pick is much more valuable than having an okay third round pick. Not by like picks, but like, you know, likely to become an NHL player. And so I'm in no position to critique Corey's selection. He's a very, very thoughtful person, and the Capitals have gone all in 3 years in a row by dealing picks here and there more or less, but I guess they really just haven't had good first round drafting position at least in what, 4 years. So I don't know, that's kind of the breaks, and they kind of did deplete it. I don't know.
I don't know if it's that bad, because it seems like the Caps do continually find kind of diamonds in the rough later in the rounds. And I think part of what kind of probably put the Caps worse was just because how bad the Hershey Bears were last year. You know, they had one of their worst seasons in a really long time. I think the organization has missed the playoffs and it's like 80 years less than 10 times. Mm-hmm. So last year was really bad with them missing the playoffs. And I think with a lot of the chaos that was going on last year, I don't think we really saw how good some of the guys that they have there are. For instance, like Jonas Siegenthaler. Yeah, like I actually think he's a good prospect. I think he has some makeup issues, and I think, you know, he needs to be a little bit more consistent, but he's a good player. Lucas Johansson is a really good player. Like when I saw him play, I mean, he's great at moving the puck. He's a great skater. He's dynamic offensively. He's just really good. He's just like, when I saw him in like mid-January, he was just kind of putting everything together. He was a little slow with making decisions, but that just comes with experience. But he looks like he's going to be a really good NHL player. So I think they actually have a lot more than what Corey may think. I just think that they've had a, I actually think that a lot of the issues prospect wise might be a little higher up than the player level. I think organizationally, I think Hershey was really, really a mess last year. And I think they really are trying to have a new structure this year with how they're going about the Bears, where they're really, really focusing on the younger players. So they may not be as good standings wise, but they weren't last year with more veterans. But I think a lot of these guys are going to rapidly develop. And so I think it'll be interesting. I actually don't think that the farm is as bad as he made it out to be. And I'm not trying to have some kind of like, you know, rosy outlook on the team. Look at all these guys that are about to step up.
Yeah, we don't know anything about the other 30 clubs. Like, that's like them. Anyways, I guess, and one thing I'll add is that like Bowie had a really bad season, and he had been considered a prospect prior to this season or last season. Same thing with Christian Juice. Jacob Vrana is probably like a year out of from being considered a prospect, but now he's like an active roster player. So like those are prospect players that either look bad this season due to systemic effects that may or may not be evaluations of the player talent, or prospects that were so good that they were just converted into active roster players. And I mean, that should hurt the overall rating of the team or the overall rating of the farm system, but it also improved the quality rating of the active team. So yeah. I think the Caps, I mean, there's going to be some kind of, you know, downfall coming. I'm not sure exactly how far out it is, but I would estimate about 3 years, maybe 4 years, where like the team really needs to like figure out some way to get back into like good drafting position or start increasing the farm. But I'm not super pessimistic just because I think the team can compete for another 3 years. So I don't actually care so bad.
Yeah. And look at the guys who have stepped in, Vrana, Burakovsky. All these guys have been young draft picks that have stepped in, and they look like they're really good players. So, you know, I'm not worried about it. And I think this year might be a little bit more revealing to what they actually have than last year.
Yeah. From Nathan, the question is, will Chandler Stephenson be a full-time player next year? I think this is an easy one.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like I said it like the nearer the top of the podcast that like the fourth line is going to be a battle. I think it's going to be a battle that Chandler Stephenson's going to pretty much easily win. I think that left wing fourth line spot is his.
And then the question becomes, is he more than that?
Yeah, I think he's a guy that I like. I don't mind him kicking up a notch. I think there's three pretty good left wingers above him in the depth chart right now. So, but like if he can flex center, if he can flex to his off wing. I liked him in his short shifts above his punching weight in the playoffs. So Chandler Stephens, a gamer. He's going to be great. I think I'd really like to see him get 82. He rules. The end. Only a couple left here. This one's from John. John asks, by the way, these are Facebook questions. They've been pretty decent. Which keepers, meaning the Caps, the players that the Caps re-signed or re-obtained, do you think will have the most impact this year? So, you know, that's Tom Wilson. That's John Carlson. That's Devontae Smith-Pelly. I think it won't be Devontae Smith-Pelly. I'm not sure that Devontae Smith-Pelly will be a full-time player. I don't know. What do you think, dude? Tom's going to be playing with Alex Ovechkin for a lot. John Carlson had a crazy ton of ice time, so I think that he's going to be a huge driver, but he also was a driver last year. I think the player that you see the biggest delta from last year will be Tom Wilson, because he's going to have lots of time at the top line. Mm-hmm. There's going to be huge expectations placed on him based on his contract and what it means for like the salary cap. I'll say Tom Wilson. And also, like, that impact could be bad if he doesn't play as expected. It could be detrimental. So I guess it's sort of like a related question to the final one, which is from Jacob. What do you think the odds are for a repeat? I don't know why everyone asks a question like this. There's so many like hashtag back-to-backs, but anyway, the odds of repeat I would say are like 1 in 12. Yeah, I wanted 1 in 12, I think, is a good one to say. I mean, like, the Caps are going to make the playoffs, and they're 1 in 16, and I think they're better than a number of teams. Maybe 1 in 10. Yeah, put me down for 1 in 10. Do you want to go out on odds there?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I'm very pessimistic about it, because I think even last year it kind of came out of nowhere. And this, I still think this team is potentially trending down. You know, last year they were trending down from the 2 years before that. Anything can happen in the playoffs, obviously, which we learned. But I think the other thing is, too, is that there's this motivation that you have when you haven't won a championship. And when that's gone, it's one of those things that you can't really measure, but it's there. And it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate that in the beginning of the year, the championship hangover. They might be great. I mean, if you look at a lot of these guys, you know, Burakovsky, Varana, Kuznetsov, Ovechkin, they've all been working out really hard this summer. You've seen on the Instagrams, you see it, like they're all,
they had to, though, from the binge drinking, they had to make up for the
fair enough. But you know, that's, I think that's going to be a big question this year, is that, you know, I hate going into the intangible stuff, but you know, mentally, emotionally, is this team going to want it as much as they wanted it last year? And are they going to be able to get to that high level of play that they got and get the same bounces, to be frank? I mean, they got a lot of luck.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that their chances of winning a cup will be. So the thing is, like, they did win a cup last year. But like, if you ask me in November or in February or in March, or the very beginning of April, what the Caps' chances of winning the Stanley Cup were, I would say not great based on what we'd seen. But they had been trending up since the middle of February last year. So if, like, you asked me, like, in the middle of the beginning of February last year, what I would expect from the team, I would say this team is not going to win the Stanley Cup. I am more optimistic about the team, you know, in October than I was about the team in February of this year. So Jacob has a second part to it, and I think this one's salient and maybe a good closing point for us. Which loss will have more of an effect, Barry Trotz or Jay Beagle?
Oh,
it's tough, because, right, like, how do you want to think about what does it mean to be, like, the effect? Like, it would be reductive to say, like, well, the Corsi percentage will be affected more by Jay Beagle.
Both of them have intangibles.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of them was a fan favorite, beloved locker room presence. The other one ran the damn locker room. So I have to think that Barry Trotz will. I think that having Jay Beagle leave removes a coaching crutch that would have been removed anyway, because Barry Trotz is gone. So I think it's got to be Barry Trotz. I think that Barry Trotz is going to be in deep S in Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the roster he has and his style of play, I think that we're going to see, and based on Long Island's performance last year, I have a feeling that, like, they're going to be south of 80 points.
Might see the end of a coaching career up in the Islanders with him.
Bro doesn't care. He's going to get $20 million either way.
Yeah.
Pay me. So I'm gonna go down Barry Trotz hard. It's Barry Trotz will have the bigger effect. But I'll also say that it's a positive effect, which may not be what Jacob was asking, but that's my thing. And I'm not being a Barry Trotz hater. I liked Barry Trotz a lot. I just think that over the duration of his time, enough bad habits accrued that the removal of him as a presence could have a net positive effect.
Yeah, I actually would go down the road of Beagle. And you know, yeah, we could be reductive to just talking about Corsi and stuff like that. But, you know, this is one of those things where it benefits me to be media and actually go in the locker room and just see how much this guy is loved and how much he stays after practice and how much hockey is his life. I think he's one of those guys that makes hockey a joy to play. And he's one of those guys that teaches other players, even if he isn't necessarily the greatest, you know, hockey player per se, because, you know, he's on the fourth line and, you know, he doesn't, you know, he's slowish. I think he's one of those guys, he's just a natural born leader. And I think that from what he's accomplished in his career, he was just a winner. He's just one of those guys you can't really replace, even though everything suggests he's replaceable. And that's one of those things that I still love about hockey, where you look at certain players where you're like, he's bad, but then you're like, wow, I don't think they could have won in the Stanley Cup Finals without him. Same with Brooks Orpik, you know, and that's something that I'm going to carry with myself for the rest of my hockey watching life, is that, you know, there are just some people who in the big moments, they are winners and they will put you over the top. And a lot of time it's Alex Ovechkin, sometimes it's Jay Beagle, sometimes it's Brooks Orpik, you know? So
No. 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 All right. So Jay Beagle like broke even in the playoffs. Like even
my son goals or me?
For Jay in your son or what do you mean?
You called me Ethan.
Did I? No.
Yeah.
No, I know. I said even.
Oh, even. Oh, okay.
Sorry. Argue with me. I can't. I want to fall over. They were so unfathomably. Okay, Brooks Orpik was amazing against Pittsburgh. I think that was an undeniably solid performance, yeah. And he had a couple huge clutch plays. He scored a goddamn goal assisted by Jay Beagle, right? that happened, and I think that was the Pittsburgh series.
Yeah, dude, like you can't deny it.
I can deny the hell out of it. I can disprove it convincingly. Brooks Orpik got hidden from the star players against every team except for Pittsburgh, where he did get some face time, and he got destroyed in every single on ice statistic except for goals, where he was one of the most fortunate players in shooting percentage and saving percentage. Like his team's saving percentage and his team's shooting percentage, he was one of the most fortunate players in the history of the playoffs. We've been reporting that stat. Same thing with Jay Beagle, and Jay Beagle didn't manage to have the best plus minus in the playoffs. He managed to break even, and this is a lot of this is just an artifact of how Jay Beagle was used. But like, holy crap! No, those guys got destroyed because they're just not up for this game anymore. And it'll be evident when neither of them are in the league in 2 years.
2 years? No, Beagle. How long did he sign his contract for?
It's a 4-year contract. He's not going to play all 4 years, and I'll bet you anything on that.
No. I agree with you on that. I just think he'll get past 2 years. I think he'll go 3.
Sir, we've got a bet. We've got a bet here. My bet is that Jay Beagle. All right, here's this. Jay Beagle play fewer than 10 games into his third season. Will you accept that?
Thinking about it.
The bet is
okay. So you think he'll play 10 games? Okay, I'll do that.
And I've got to buy you a Gold Rush, and you've got to buy me a roast beef sandwich. All right. Podcast listeners, you heard it here. Please enforce these rules. I'll write this up at some point. That'll be our bet. Ian, as always, it was a pleasure going through these Q&As. I want to thank our patrons for asking the really good questions, our Facebook readers for asking solid questions.
What happened? And, yeah.
And Twitter just dropped the ball.
Yeah, come on Twitter, guys.
Eddie's was good. The one about like the bands was good.
Kind of deep, yeah.
I can't believe I told people
I saw a Puddle of Mud concert. I just feel so embarrassed.
I had Stain's first album.
Oh.
but I'll say this. I always, like, from the minute like Limp Bizkit got big, I was like, friends, this is horrible. Like, have you listened to like Roland in the last year?
It's so bad. Oh god, it's so bad.
Like, if I was making bad music on purpose, it wouldn't come close to that. It is stunning how idiotic that was.
Well, it's just the lyrics. They're so banal and not even remotely deep.
All right, here we go. Roland, Limp Bizkit. Lyrics. Here we go. All right, partner. Keep on rolling, baby. You know what time it is. Throw your hands up, ladies and gentlemen. Chocolate Starfish. That, I think, means
that's
anuses.
Their album. Yeah.
Keep on rolling, baby. Move in, now move out. Hands up, now hands down. Back up, back up. Tell me what you're going to do now. Breathe in, now breathe out. Hands up, repeat, repeat, repeat. Keep rolling, 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 rolling. What? Keep rolling, 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 rolling. Come on. All right, let's get into the verse. And by the way, like it's like a bad trope for like some suburban white dude to read rap lyrics on a podcast, because that's what like racists do. But it's Limp Bizkit, so it's okay. Now I know why y'all be loving this shit right here. LIMP Bizkit is right here. I don't know what LIMP stands for, but he seems to insinuate that it's an acronym or initialism of some kind. People in the house, put them hands in the air, because if you don't care, then we don't care. And I remember when he sings that one, he goes, because if you don't care, we don't care. 1, 2, 3 × 2 to the 6 jolts in your fix with the Limp Bizkit mix. So where the F you at, punk? Shut the F up, back the F up while we F this track up.
Deep. Deep indeed.
Thanks for listening to the Rush Machine Podcast. I'm sorry I wasted your time for the last 90 seconds.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.